Okay, welcome back to episode 207, right?
207, Tim.
207. Okay, so Joe, another interesting week. Never a dull moment in the new normal, postmodern America, the world. We had this the vegetable in chief went on a foreign trip. So Dementia Joe went abroad, representing the United States, and I guess he's trying to be passed off as some sort of statesman. He said America will honor all its commitments. I don't know what that means. The funny thing, I think, Senator, I'm sorry, Vice President Harris went south of the border and was greeted with a bunch of I guess Hondurans with signs that read that Trump won.
Yeah, that's funny.
And they're jeering her. I guess her fact as a fellow POC didn't cut it quite down there. I guess she figured, because she has a darker skin, or I guess dark skin, that meant she was part of the club. But I guess many people didn't feel that she was one of them. She said, "Don't come up to the Guatemalans," apparently. So,
Yeah. Well, frankly, given the condition of the country, I mean, you don't have to say that twice, you know.
Yeah. Well,
That
yeah,
doesn't
I
matter.
think the phase of employment of wanting, the cheap labor from south of the border might be ending, and I think they want to be importing folks from the Asian subcontinent for like cheap high tech labor now to institute the new normal. But nevertheless, I think she, I mean, it's kind of funny watching her speak. I actually, despite Joe Biden's dementia and his reduced cognitive skills, I think he's sharper than she is. He's sharper than she is. She's
She's
awful.
the worst. She's the worst public speaker in America since Tiny Tim.
Yes.
I mean, it's just unbelievable that this creature has become vice president, and of course, will soon be president.
Yes. If you get him out of the way, or he just. But maybe they can just prop him up and have him scribble his name on executive orders the next few years. I don't know.
You know, there is this theory that one of the reasons they chose Biden is because they're certain that he will be out of existence and they can literally put a hologram in. I mean, some of
Yeah.
the videos of his activities are clearly CGI. I mean, this has already been well established. So, I mean, I think it might be the case that we'll have a completely artificial being as president shortly.
Which is kind of fitting because if you survey our political leadership, whether it's the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, or the clown in the Senate, Schumer, who's an Israeli agent, I guess he's probably has more power than all of them. He's probably more in charge of anything than Pelosi or Joe Biden. But the political leadership really, it really is largely irrelevant given the true nature of political power in the United States, because they're not controlling anything. They're just following orders, does it make a difference?
Of course not. I mean, there our political reality, sad to say, is is like Biden's replacement. It's a hologram. They have this idea about struggle and democracy and Trump versus Hillary, but I think obviously this is fake at the highest level. As you go down ballot, I think the further down ballot you go, the more democracy becomes real. Certainly looks real to me. If you've got a sheriff that's willing to defend you against unconstitutional edicts from a governor. So, you know, I as you said so clearly like a month ago, the solution to genocidal globalism is radical localism. And so this is what we just have to focus on.
Well,
There has
yeah, that's where they've stopped. Like, it's at the local level where a lot of this great reset stuff has been stopped, or stymied, or delayed, or Drag Queen Story Hour. It's local officials that have stopped it once the attention was put on it. And that's also just as a practical matter, you're much more likely, if you're given to run for office, to actually make a difference at those local levels than you are if you run for Congress, or the Senate, or the God forbid, the presidency of the United States.
Yeah, I think all of the federal offices, 95%, are nonsense. They're just they're controlled, and the you know, it doesn't matter if the Republican or the Democrat you know wins. There's going to be exactly the same policy. So we have to change direction in order to survive. We just have to find a way to disconnect from the federal power, from the federal narrative, and start concentrating on what we need to do to have some independence, freedom, and power.
Well, in the meantime, the Attorney General said that he's going to go on a crusade to protect voting rights. So,
right.
Okay. At the same time, they're passing, you know, they're trying to pass legislation to really do away with any notion of accountability or scrutiny elections. They're going to expand voting, make sure everyone gets to vote, even though evidently it doesn't really matter how you vote, because they have it set up either through mail-in voting or through electronic voting that they can just you know, create votes when they want to. So,
well, now that Trump is out of the way, what really is standing between the Democratic Party and a perpetual dictatorship? I mean, since they couldn't have an election that appeared to be more fake than the last one, right?
No,
Therefore, since they have control over the military and the media, they can just put in anyone they want. The only thing I think they'll continue to flip flop between Republicans and Democrats just because it's mind control. It just keeps us believing that the federal activity is something we have, you know, some participation in, when in fact it's just a movie, you know, that is created to keep us confused.
Mm-hmm. Well, it keeps the charade going, the puppet, you know, show. So people, you know, invest their time in that. You know, it's like I saw a thing. There was a RAND report that came out about conspiracy theory, and it said there are various theories out there, ideas out there, and it said the way you can engage these ideas and keep them from becoming dangerous is how they phrase it. You know, with the social media and these things, just wildly out of control these narratives, is you can engage these conspiracy theories. And one of the conspiracy theories that you want to engage in is like the UFO thing. So you want to encourage it and you keep it from going too, I guess, too crazy. But there's one theory that they didn't want you to engage at all. That is the conspiracy theory of white genocide, which is funny. So I guess that's one you consider valid, because they don't want you to engage it in any way, because they don't want people to be aware of it, because they're busy declaring war on white supremacists. So,
right, I know. Yeah, it's just the way that they keep us confused. I wonder how much power this has. I mean, obviously a lot of people believe it, right, and are influenced by it. But I don't think that they can keep the independent media from gathering its harvest of people. You know, I mean, the vaccine thing is just such a clear example now of the struggle between the independent media and, you know, the federal government and mainstream media. In California, there is just round-the-clock propaganda to take the vax.
Mm-hmm.
And celebrities, you know, everyone is just encouraging. But the reality is, it stopped. They got to what they claim is like around 50%, and I can just tell by, you know, communications from people that I know throughout the state who are on top of this, it's just slow to an absolute trickle.
Well, maybe
very few people, and the people who aren't taking it are open to the independent media. I mean, they may have. I think the majority of them, I would say, got their information through the independent media about the vaccine. Mm-hmm. So now the government harvested the old, you know, parts of the military that you know, couldn't say no, you know, some student groups, and then the weak-minded, and that's the group. That's what they have. Now, I would say the majority of clear-minded people aren't going to take it, and almost 100% of the people who are capable of being skeptical and fighting against the government just don't buy into the vax storyline at all. So what have they accomplished? They've accomplished a purification. Now, you know, we're going to be able to more easily identify ourselves. And when the full reality of the damage the vaccine has done is finally gets through to the people and those who have been vaxxed or who had loved ones who ended up with adverse reactions, we'll even have a kind of afterburner moment. We'll get in more people into our side of the equation. Because I'll tell you, I don't know if you've been following it, but this last week was, it really was the week, I think, that the adverse events started to turn the corner in terms of publicity. It's really picking up speed, Tim. There's just more and more people who are calling out the propaganda, and it's because everyone knows someone who's been injured. You know, if you know someone who actually had been damaged by the vaccine, it's really hard to, you know, have de Blasio give you a burger and then you roll up your sleeve.
Yeah, as opposed to like people who don't know anyone who died from COVID.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
So, well, I think what maybe they'll stage an alien arrival, a flying saucer will come in the middle, you know, land in Washington, D.C., and someone will emerge, a mysterious figure will emerge from the flying saucer and announce to all humanity to take the jab.
Sure. That's right. They'll come in a flying burger.
Yeah. You know, and if you don't take the jab, a robot will emerge and disintegrate you with his laser. I don't know.
I think I mentioned last week, I know about 40 people, maybe more, that have taken the jab. I know 10 people who've had really bad reactions to it. One almost died. So if I have that response, and believe me, I'm not out trying to, you know, canvas the vaxxed, you know, for symptoms, this has to be pretty common. Now they're not going to get even anywhere near 200 million people. And there was a podcast that I think is controlled opposition. I'm pretty sure about it by Dark Horse, Brett Weinstein. It's available. It's called, I think, Three Ways to Save the World. And he had Mulholland and Kirsch. These are two big shots in kind of the world of virology. It was funny listening to them talk. I mean, these guys have all been vaxxed or are taking ivermectin, you know, so they're believers in COVID. But it was interesting to listen to their discussion because the behavior of the CDC and basically of the whole oversight process of, you know, the vaccine safety is simply not defensible. This one guy, Kirsch, who's a Jewish guy, and, you know, he was in on the mouse. He's an older guy. I would think he's a controlled opposition, but he was actually hysterical about how evil. And, you know, he didn't go all the way to say that evil is in back of the vaccine. I mean, they were trying to create this idea that it's just a process problem and greed has somehow gotten control of the system, you know, something like this. But several times he came pretty close to talking about evil and depopulation. But the most important thing is, first of all, he talked about the spike protein. You know, we've talked about this many times, how they claimed that it was going to stay put and wouldn't get out into the body. And then the biodistribution information came out and other studies showing that the spike protein was sticking around, that the thing is very pathological, that is very destructive to the body. And it lasts for, well, the one study was saying, you know, 2 weeks, which is basically 13 days longer than Pfizer and Moderna were claiming, plenty of time for it to get into every single cell and do damage and be responsible for all these side effects that we're seeing. This information is becoming more mainstream. It's just becoming more and more people are becoming aware of it. I mean, think about how little informed their consent there was. So last, say, January or December, when it was first being rolled out, was there anyone in America who was talking about the dangers of this spike protein that the vaccine creates out of thin air and then presents to the immune system? I mean, no one even had a, an inkling of an idea that they wouldn't even be able to describe the technology, first of all, so there wasn't any informed consent in fact. But even the cognoscenti, the people who are like into, you know, like the mRNA vaccines, they couldn't tell you how it worked. They couldn't tell you that the spike protein was a danger. But now it's becoming just in the everyday discussion. And I just don't think the government story can hold up against just this, you know, clear reality that people are becoming aware that there's something inside the vaccine that could be toxic.
Yeah, I mean, the moment I heard about the idea of the spike protein as opposed to a conventional vaccine, being a lay person, I'm not a scientist. I don't like that because, you know, obviously they're setting you up for an autoimmune disorder with this thing. Yeah. And they don't know themselves. And of course, they've never developed a successful vaccine for coronavirus anyway. So why would this be any different? And of course, doing it under the conditions of warp speed, a crash program, made me even more skeptical. I'm skeptical of vaccines in general, you know, and the whole big pharma medical industrial complex, what's really behind it. But that being said, it's like, why would you trust any of this stuff? And given the fact that, again, the conditions never called for any crash program or any panic or any real containment measures at all, because there was nothing novel, unusual what occurred in 2020. It was all a narrative that was spun out of, cooked books and statistical alchemy and fakery and just corruptions. And that's what I see the whole thing as. So, it's all malevolent and corrupt in my eye. But basically on that line is there was this link was sent to me. College of Physicians and Surgeons of Ontario, the CPSO, and this was on April 30th, announced explicitly a controversial policy that many Ontario doctors had intuitively feared would adopt. Its Twitter feed at CPSO _CA contained the framed statement shown below. Oh, I don't have that. I'm sorry. But basically, the CPSO commands Ontario doctors not to make any statements that might be considered anti-vaccine, anti-masking, anti-distancing, anti-lockdown. It forbids them to promote unsupported, unproven treatments for COVID-19. What's unproven? What are their standards? Doctors are further forbidden to make comments that might encourage people to act contrary to public health orders. What if public orders are contrary to public health? Finally, there's a naked threat. Say the wrong thing and you'll face disciplinary actions. This translates into, we'll suspend your license, cut off your income stream, and impoverish you. So this statement from both the medical and legal, pretty disturbing from both a medical and legal perspective. Some doctors have gotten together. There's a courageous group of doctors calling themselves the Canadian Physicians for Science and Truth, quickly pushed back with an online declaration. This article. Yeah, as I write this, 548 doctors and 14,487 concerned citizens have already signed it. The doctors make these three major objections. First, the CPSO is commanding them to abandon the scientific method, which requires vigorous open debate in order to test existing theories and improve upon or replace them with more accurate ones. That's how science advances. Second, the CPSO is commanding doctors to breach their pledge to patients to seek out and apply evidence-based medicine in their care and treatment. Instead of a full range of current emerging evidence from multiple sources, doctors are restricted to applying stagnant information from one source, the government. Third, doctors are being ordered to violate their patients' rights to be fully informed before receiving medical treatment. This implies that doctors will also have to violate their own duty to obtain fully informed consent, putting themselves at risk for eventual lawsuits. So basically, they're trying to shut down intimidate doctors from offering what doctors, a professionally trained physician might see as the best advice for their patients. So again, you have an example using governmental or regulatory authority from the state to suppress debate or information on this rather important public health matter. It's telling that they have to resort to that.
Sure, I was delighted to see it. It made my whole day. This is desperation. There is no way this is going to work. The doctors who would go along with this approach are already brain dead, mm-hmm. right? And I'm sure there's tons of them in Canada, for God's sake. The place is so Masonic. I mean, I mean, they're not exactly known for, you know, just independent thinking, unfortunately. But the ones who wouldn't, the 548 doctors who said no, there's probably, you know, thousands in this area in Ontario, but their response to this is going to be the purification. Because believe me, they're going to say, you know, I can't function like this. And things will occur. Hopefully there will be illegal medicine administered, mm-hmm. because in the sense of illegal, because they will just separate. They'll say, look, we're sorry. We just do not accept the authority of fascism and of, you know, like no ability to give the best medical care to our patients. So think about, you know, just what they even hope to accomplish with such a declaration. Yeah, I mean, I read the declaration and it was just, you know, it's just bold face dictatorship and fascism. But all it's going to do is radicalize the small group, whatever that is, of people who they were trying to control. This mm-hmm. isn't going to control anybody. It will intimidate those that are already intimidated and enrage those that would have rebelled. And you see, this is the purification that's going on, because they have to come up with statements like this. I mean, think about what's in back of the statement. What is going on in Canada is a rebellion of information among the physicians in relationship to the vaccine and mm-hmm. to COVID, right? I'm in, you know, dozens of websites, and, you know, you can just see it everywhere that there are these, the doctors in Canada are on to the fact that the government is malevolent. Okay, so they just understand it. So this is an attempt to just put the boot right on their face and to stop them, to give some grounds, I presume, for them, to their license being taken away. So what? Let them take it away.
Yeah, what are you licensed to do?
Yeah, the license to do what? To vaccinate people?
How many patients of mine should die so I can maintain my license?
Well,
jeez.
But also, yeah. people have to make the intellectual bit flip of the purification. The old world is gone. It's not, Tim, I hate to say it, we all have to accept it. The illusionary world of democracy and of, you know, political process and all this, it's gone. A group has seized political power. They've been at it for centuries, and now they're attempting dictatorship. So the world we thought we have isn't with us.
Yeah, they're no longer maintaining the facade. And, of course, that matters, because to maintain the facade in window dressing, you have to at least respect some things like freedom of speech and some freedom. So now they're removing the velvet, you know, glove off the male fist. So, yeah.
But they can't. But when they do that, they expose themselves as just bold-faced jackboot dictators. Mm-hmm. And now think of all of the doctors who had been confused about the nature of the government.
Yes.
Right. This has probably been the largest fraction, probably 40-50% of the doctors may have thought government was incompetent or wasteful or perhaps malevolent to a degree, but they didn't think it was a secret society intent on genocide.
Yeah.
But now they can see it. Now they can see it. So what the doctors need to do is, I mean, if I was them, I would give them the same advice that I gave to Bishop, forget his name, though, who is a former nuncio from the...
Oh, Vigano.
Vigano, sorry, brain work. I would say, look, instead of like writing a letter, you know, of like complaining, they should just make a declaration saying, we're done with the government. We're creating our own organization. We'll have our own standard of ethics. And we encourage Canadians, free-thinking Canadians, to use our services. We are simply through. And then just do what they can to arrange themselves inside of groups. I mean, this would be a good process because, you know, there obviously wouldn't be a lot of revenue anymore, because this is, of course, how they control them, is with the money. Mm-hmm. But they would have freedom of mind and their hearts would be in the right place. And then they could join with two communities. They could say, hey, look, let's get together into to a little heavily armed, ethnically kind of focused community that wants to defend itself, and I'll be the doctor. And we need a sheriff, and we need, you know, like security, and we need food, you know, and just start looking like that, because the old world is gone. It isn't going to come back. It is, you know, there'll be drips and, you know, twists and turns. I mean, the state of California is now in code, you know, scared yellow. It's
yeah.
The lowest of the code. So the restaurants are open, but you can be sure come November, they're going to lock it down again.
Yeah, if they, I don't know, I don't know, be surprised, but I'm saying they've lost so much legitimacy in the eyes of you know, huge portions of the public now that it'd be interesting if they try to pull off another pandemic scare. I think that's why they're moving towards like a cyber attack scenario, which is very similar because at the end it's a virus, right? You can't see, and its origins, you know, are mysterious. And you know, apparently various forces want to bring the system down, but no one can identify who these forces are. It's, you know, it's like, it's, you know, and the origins of the threat are unknown. And it's, again, it's all about fear, uncertainty, you know, and doubt and creating, you know, in the public sphere, make everyone all fried and afraid and nervous and, you know, off balance. But one thing that strikes me is just sort of how the whole truth idea, the whole truth movement, if you will, is it's largely asymmetrical nature. If you look at, I don't know, how would you quantify the dollar value of, say, the mainstream media, the propaganda machine that the regime, the globalist control, probably, say, maybe it's $1 trillion globally worthwhile, all the networks, so, and college, yeah, whatever, maybe say $2 trillion worth, entertainment, universities, advertising, sports, everything that supports the narrative, that's all part of the regime, probably, you know, capitalized into the trillions. What's the truth movement? Probably, let's say 100 million globally, maybe, if you look at the dollar value. And look what they have to do. They have to shut it down. They can't cope with it. They can't compete with the ideas or the questions that it asks. So they got to just have to engage in this ham-fisted censorship, which just further erodes their credibility, because any thinking person is going to look at Twitter, which is now just an echo chamber, or YouTube, or the New York Times, for that matter, or, you know, the Washington Post, or the media, as a source of any worthwhile information, or the pronouncements or statements from public health officials or government officials. No one trusts them anymore, and no thinking person trusts them anymore. So there's that purification thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely right. I think everything, you know, it's hard to believe, given how ragtag and disorganized we are. But honestly, I think we're winning.
Yeah.
Because they just keep shooting themselves in the foot, mm-hmm, because they have nowhere to turn.
Well, I think the resort to the male fist is a sign they're losing. Because once they lose the mind control, the covert element of it, then they might have a problem, because then people become aware. That's what they're really afraid of.
Yeah, and that's why we really need to, you know, with the Chinese strategist Sun Yat-sen, you know, he's saying, you know, when they're strong, you know, you run away, and when they're, you know, this is a time, the purification, we don't want to engage them. I mean, I think the protests are great because they give the kind of word to the public, the people sitting on the fence, you know, that the public per se is really, you know, in opposition to the mainstream media. But they don't, obviously they accomplish nothing in terms of the political class. I mean, you could have 10 million people in the streets in London, it wouldn't make a bit of difference to the Masonic government. I mean, they could care less. So, you know.
But no, they have to actually fear for their physical safety for them to do anything. That's the unfortunate reality.
Well, that's right. I mean, because that is really where we're at. I mean, they are killing us every way they can. And so we have certainly every moral right to fight back. But you have to do it smart. You know, you have to do it in a way that it actually has some effect. But the fact is they're going to, if you look at like Melbourne or Ontario, where the College of Physicians and Surgeons issued that comment from, you know, all of these are the reason why they picked these places is because because they have the most Masonic control over the police departments. If you notice in the videos, the places that have the most strict lockdowns, the police all have the checkerboard pattern on their jackets and their hats, you know. I mean, mm-hmm. So Ontario, Melbourne, London, these are the Masonic hot zones. It's where they've been, you know, in control for the longest. And so they probably have a pretty deep down control over the police department, probably have Masons all the way down into, you know, the street patrol guys. So it just isn't a good place to try to do a, you know, a military maneuver. I mean, it's a good place to get out of. Let them have it. What are they going to do with it? Mm-hmm. You know, they what we need to do is to survive, organize, and become stronger while they just, you know, the rationale that they're giving is not really going to convince many people. And remember, the group that they're going to have left will be the vaxxed. They're going to have the unpurified as their constituents. Now, someone is going to have to take care of all those people with immune disorders. So it's not like they're going to really have a, you know, a robust army coming out of their Democratic constituency, just the opposite. They'll probably have to genocide the whole lot of them en masse because they'd just be too expensive to maintain. But then, you know, by that point, the battle lines will be drawn and then just everyone will have to do the best they can to survive and organize. But this process that we're in, even though it's, I know people, you know, become discouraged and stuff, and you see this stuff like this where they're going, you know, you can't say anything other than what we tell you, Tim, they wouldn't be doing this stuff if they really had a trajectory to complete mind control that, you know, that they thought they could do using the internet and stuff. This shows to me that they have blundered. Their understanding of human nature was not correct. I mean, Norbert Wiener's, the programming of the human mind that they thought they could get done with pornography and the iPhone, just didn't quite work out. And so now they've got hundreds of millions of Europeans still alive. And I think we're just getting clear-minded and more clear-minded. And, you know, we are living in interesting times because, but anyway, just to back up, I was just going to mention that I was in touch with an individual in Seattle, and the news he brought was really grim. It was a brutal conversation because it was so honest. I mean, this is a guy, and it's saying this is a righteous, couldn't be more righteous of an individual. He was the one that brought all of us the eyes on the ground of the autonomous zone. He went in there and, you know, he lives in Seattle. He got all the actual data of what was going on there when the media was talking about some kind of political rebellion. But the fact was it was just a fentanyl brigade and a few, zealots. But anyway, he was saying that Seattle has fallen. It has simply fallen. The middle class businesses are being driven out. He said that it's a homeless encampment and fentanyl brigade just tipped astern. The autonomous zone has moved out, and now it's basically almost everywhere. And he was saying that the beneficiary, the financial beneficiary of this was Amazon. And he claimed or thought that he had evidence that Amazon was actually running the city now. He said their trucks are really, you know, the ones that you see kind of, having real activity. And the employees of Amazon are a political power now inside the city because they have all the money. They can live wherever they want. And the real kind of middle class businesses, of which one of them was his, are all leaving. They can't stay there. There isn't any commerce, really, because of the homeless encampment and the fentanyl brigade. And Amazon is just aggressively taking over the leases and the buildings and just basically taking complete control of the city. I mean, this was an amazing dystopian and weird vision that I hadn't understood until I talked to him about
yeah.
the idea of like a corporation literally taking over a city. But he says that this is his honest opinion. And he, believe me, is a clear-minded guy. What he's doing is moving to the Olympic Peninsula and then maybe even beyond other areas. But he says that once you get outside of the Walmazan zone, he said that the people become more normal the further away you get, the more normal they get, until eventually you reach areas where people are armed. He says when you get there, when you see that people are nervous and driving around with guns, he says now you're home. And this is the world we live in. I mean, this, gosh, it's just so strange. I mean, think of the U.S. 2 years ago. And
now, is it the white supremacist who went into Seattle and caused the terrorists, the white supremacist terrorists?
White supremacists like Jeff Bezos.
Yes. That, I mean, it's interesting you talk about Amazon because, you know, with their Amazon Web Services, AWS, you see that. It's sort of how they're kind of, they're sort of, you know, expanding their control, their reach, their tendrils throughout society, and sort of through this corporate subscription-based service, they're taking over the governance and control of society.
Yeah,
and
he was saying that the Amazon truck drivers are basically the police now.
It's like BlackRock and how they're buying up all this that's been in the news now, which is good because people are getting aware of this, how they've leveraged the money they were given, the trillions they were given, you know, at no cost by the New York Fed. And now they're buying up a huge swath of residential real estate, paying over, you know, above and beyond the market. And what are they doing with this? Because, you know, they're not, it's not really, they're playing with house money. And so it's this huge concentration that's occurring through these corporations. And there was a piece I was reading about the sort of cyber warfare, cyber attack a scenario that they're talking about now, you know, with the attack on JBS, the SolarWinds thing, these sort of these what I think are false flag cyber attacks, is they're creating a justification for an sort of a completely integrated system where banking, financial, communication, commerce services are all integrated under one eye in the name of security. Of course, you know how that can be abused. So everything has to be integrated. Everything has to be top down, vertically integrated and controlled in the name of security, of cybersecurity, because they've created a system of commerce, of supply chain, and where apparently the whole world can be brought to a standstill with a click of a mouse. I don't buy it. I think, you know, obviously the people who are warning us about this are engaged in it. You know, how can you not suspect it when you hear about things like the Stuxnet virus that the U.S. and Israelis, and it turns out that when you look into this, whether it's a JBS thing or the SolarWinds thing, it's all these Israeli Jewish-owned high-tech firms that have they link back to Israel's Unit 8200, which is their, you know, their high-tech intel, you know, agency, and so I mean, it's all about, you know, again, creating a situation where they can digitize everything and then control it. You know, my feeling is if digitization creates the opportunity where one click of a mouse can bring the whole thing down, then you're best to stick with analog and deal with the inefficiency there, you know.
Yeah. You know? Well, also with the freedom. I mean, yeah. Look, the digital world was created by the MK Ultra group.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a fact, you know, and they brought us sex, drugs, pornography, drugs, and the personal computer. Mm-hmm. It's all one process. It was all discussed and understood in the cybernetics conference that was going on at the Macy conferences.
Mm-hmm.
You read that information. I mean, it's pretty straightforward. They talked about controlling society. They talked about mass media. And of course, they had every imaginable anthropologist in the world there. They all worked for the CIA at that point. What is it? What's his name? David Reich was saying 80% of the PhDs in anthropology were government agents, mm-hmm. basically. So this was just a way for them to study us and then to try to set up. They thought they could set up a slave state, you know, with the iPhone, kind of a Huxley Disneyland, you know, because the elements that would bring you in would be drugs and sex and music and things. But eventually you'd just be sitting there staring at the screen and powerless to do anything. So when you talk about the analog world, what you're really saying is this was the world that freedom could exist in. Mm-hmm. The internet world has, because we don't control it. I mean, the analog world is, you know, made up of, you know, it has the the atmosphere and, you know, the natural elements that that we have some control over, they own the internet world. It's this is, you know, it's like the people who talk to the college physicians, you know, that group. I mean, they own that world. So we can't, it's not a world we can really live
yeah,
in.
Yeah, well, in the analog world, you can't pretend that that you can transform into a woman if you're a man or vice versa. You know,
yeah.
You know, you're grounded in reality. It's such thing, you're engaged in actual production. You know, and of course, the internet world, that was a massive financial sort of chicanery, which you get the alchemy of finance. And this is all part of the financialization of the alchemical corruption of the economy. And that's why you right now you have, you know, Main Street small businesses shutting down, and but Wall Street's at record highs. I mean, how can I, you know?
You know, I wanted to congratulate you on your prescience. Gosh, how long ago was it? Maybe over a year, when you were saying that there was going to be a the corporations would find a way to take advantage of the chaos financially. And when I was talking to Rob, your words came back to me about how accurate you were, that now Amazon is basically going to own all of the valuable real estate in Seattle, in conjunction with a few other oligarch corporations.
Mm-hmm.
And the middle class, their ownership is gone. So, you know, we need to retreat to the analog world. We should only be using the internet world to rebel, to organize and rebel. We shouldn't, you know, nothing about it is real. It's and in any case, we can be observed. When we go into self-defense mode, which will be coming up shortly, you can't use the internet at all. Right? I mean, that's not going to work because they look at every single thing.
Mm-hmm.
They can have algorithms just, you know, checking it all out. So you have to develop systems of communication from the analog world. That's just all there is to it. And then, you know, when you get to organized democracy, when we get back to some kind of real representation, again, it has to be analog. I mean, you just look at like how Facebook and Google with their sophisticated algorithms can mind shape. Right,
mm-hmm.
You can't have a real political a democracy when you have something like Facebook with all the fancy algorithms to move, you know, people toward, you know, the, you know, political positions that they think they can be budged toward if they put them in certain thought circles, and of course Google with nonsense where it just takes you to, you know, whatever they think you should be thinking is what they present to you. So, you know, it's just that's out of the question. And this is good. This is all part of purification, buddy. We have to get away from the internet world immediately and get back to the analog world.
Mm-hmm. Well, this week we wanted to talk about the idea of a blood libel, particularly a blood libel that's being created against white people. This has been happening for a very long time. It's been in the works. I think it goes back even as far back as the early days of the so-called civil rights movement. This year's the year is 2021, and it's being observed as the 100th anniversary of this event in Tulsa, Oklahoma. At one time, it was called the Tulsa Race Riot. It was one time also called the Tulsa Negro Rebellion earlier time, but now it's been sort of spun into a massacre where supposedly hundreds of blacks were murdered by whites for no apparent good reason. And you know, this has gotten the attention of the White House. There's a commission formed to study it, backed by a few wealthy Jewish families. Surprise, surprise. It was President Biden who said went. I think he went there and he said, "Literal hell was unleashed in 1921," and he said people were literally torn apart. There's one part of town, in Tulsa, that was referred to as Black Wall Street was burned to the ground. The business section. This started because there was a young woman who was allegedly sexually assaulted by a black man. This is something. In the elevator,
yeah.
This is, I think, a Diamond, what was his name? Diamond Dick was his nickname or something. She was an elevator handler, and apparently she screamed, and he ran out. Then he was arrested. A mob formed. This wasn't uncommon when behavior like this was reported, but apparently there was a confrontation at the jailhouse where the sheriff had secured the prisoner, and he wasn't going to let anyone touch him. They're going to let due process take over. But then an armed group of black men showed up, and there was a shootout. Apparently, it was initiated by the group of black men. And initially, 10 whites were murdered or killed, as opposed to 2 blacks. Then it started, and there was this riot. I think the official death toll at the time was close to 3 dozen. And then it lasted a couple of days. It ended. A lot of property was burned. There's a big question of a lot of these things. There's a question of who burned the property. There were reports of armed black men shooting from the belfry of churches, so the church was burned down. But anyway, it was what they call a race riot or confrontation, not a massacre. And not many people have heard about this. I heard about it a few years ago. I was talking about Black Wall Street, and sort of these things become embellished for obvious reasons. But for this year, I guess they started talking about last year, of course, in the wake of the George Floyd incident and the riots that ensued, that they're weaving this entire tale about a white mob killing hundreds of blacks and burying them in unmarked graves, which they haven't been able to dig up. There's a lot of money being invested in. I think the mayor of Tulsa is a white Republican, so he's pandering. He's doing this. Apparently, during the observance, they were supposedly going to get some witnesses to this. Now, I'm doing my math. 100 years. What witnesses could there be? But nevertheless, I guess there were small children at the time, and they're the only surviving witnesses to the event. They were supposed to show up at the event and be paid $100,000, but they asked for $1 million, so the event was canceled. So this goes to that saying, I think it was Haas's statement, that every mass movement becomes a cult, a racket, or a corporation. And that's certainly, I think that's all true of the civil rights movement. So we have this, again, what's happening is this. So crimes are being ascribed to, or certain events are being taken out of context. A lot of these riots, these anti-black riots that you saw in the early part of the 20th century, or lynchings that occurred, was a sign. Often this was the way justice was meted out. Often it was a response to real crimes or sexual assaults and these things. So the instigating or the precipitating event was usually a violent act up on a part of blacks. But since the civil rights movement, sort of the narrative is that it's always this irrational white hatred. There's no context to this, and so it's another attempt to take a situation, spin a narrative, sort of a moralistic narrative, anti-white narrative that we all must accept, not taking in this nuance or complexity of the time, like the problem of black crime in a certain area, like in this, particularly in the Reconstruction South, the post-Civil War South, was a big problem. Roving bands
I
of black
lost
men.
it, Tim.
Can you hear me? Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now.
Okay, when did I cut off?
Oh gosh, I would just start over the thought.
Oh.
It's too far back in time, I can't go.
Okay, well, probably the listeners probably were hearing. So, but often these events they're not given any nuance, or nor is any consideration for the time period of what really was going on. We only can see these events through the lens of the post-civil rights era, where it's white people always bad, blacks pure and always victims. And so, this creates in a sense, a blood libel, because right now white people now are being asked, so this antiquarian white guilt, to be responsible for these actions of 100 years ago. And of course, this ignores that we're supposed to whine, or we're supposed to feel guilty and feel bad and take a knee and bow and beg for forgiveness, and then dole out reparations for crimes of our ancestors, but ignore, of course, the current situation. Whereas you'll hear reports of perhaps maybe 1,200 lynchings occurring within a century period, but then there are 3,000 deaths, homicides a year, in a few cities. Or I think just last year, there are 2,000 more homicides in 1 year. So more people, the increase in 1 year, were more people that were lynched in an entire century in Reconstruction South. Put these things in context. Or we're supposed to, again, feel guilty about these incidents that occurred 100 years ago, 75 years ago, 80 years ago, whether it's Emmett Till or Tulsa, these things. But then nowhere is there any responsibility for how white ethnic groups have suffered because of forced integration, like the neighborhoods in Detroit or Philadelphia, or New York or Boston that were destroyed by integration. The cost is there any talk of recompense or reparations for the cost of crime? You just look at the you just you can usually find watching local news, but there's been a huge increase in black and white crime just in the past year. Horrible stories or reports are being about. There was a 4-year-old child that was stabbed to death by a black guy for no particular reason. He was kidnapped out of his room. There was a recent incident in Fargo, North Dakota, where a 14-year-old girl was stabbed to death by what they call a black man, a drifter, they call. And each of these cases, it's called random. It's whenever there's black and white crime, it's random violence. But the news report isn't reported. News reports aren't reporting as if there's any ethnic element to these crimes, or there's a trend we should follow, or we should be concerned with. Any large, if there's prox if the white people have proximity to any large black community, they're going to have a lot of crime. And when they try to control it or act like good citizens and fight crime, they're brought up on charges, like the father and son who got in the conflict with Ahmaud Arbery last year. They tried to stir it up. They're charged with murder, despite the fact that they have videos of this guy, Ahmaud Arbery, breaking into various homes, construction sites, and stealing things like copper and tools. And so at the same time, they're being told that any sign of policing or citizen patrol or any attempt to defend yourself, you're going to be brought up on charges. Just like that guy who defended himself outside his bar, and he was charged with assault. He ended up committing suicide. Or the couple in St. Louis, the guy's now running for Senate, was the McCloskeys, was their name? Was I get that name right? In St. Louis. And so you're trying to defend yourself. But and what they're doing is they're creating a blood libel for whites. And this is, again, is this a prelude to sort of a dispossession, ultimately to a white genocide?
Well, sure, it's part of it, but getting back to the Tulsa thing, I mean, I've looked at this, and my opinion is it was a Masonic operation. I do think that the Tulsa Black Wall Street wasn't liked by the Masonic elements. I know the first gunshots were fired from the Masonic Lodge there, supposedly. This is supposedly. This is one of the the information about the event is so different. There's like 10 different versions of it. But in my opinion, I don't think it's circumstance that the Black Wall Street got burned. I think that the group that would want this done would be the same group that had been controlling sort of the black relationship to culture all along, which is the Freemasons. I mean, if you look at the Prince Hall Masons, who are the celebrities in the 20th century, black celebrities, it's like 100%. So they're all oath-taking Masons that were, I think, under control to some extent. I think the Tulsa thing, the Judaic-Masonic kind of controllers are always looking for ways to get us to kill one another. This is, I mean, just think about the racial hatred against the Hun, right? And so if you compare the stories about the African male that were coming out of basically the Masonic media in like the beginning of the 20th century, between 1910, 19 th this era, the era of the lynching, supposedly, which I think most of which are fictitious, but I'm sure some are real. The black was really quite a parallel to the German kind of animal, a bestial creature, and I think for the same purpose. I just think that they've always had in mind that that the European and the African Americans would one day slaughter each other. I think that's just, to me, this is just self-evident almost. And so now we have a situation where the whites or the Europeans are being moved to the bottom of the social strata. and in a very dangerous place because of, you know, all of the white supremacy facade, we will be under attack here. Like you say, we'll be under physical attack. And I've talked to just, you know, a bunch of black intellectuals who reach out from my past, because I knew a lot of these guys, but also people listen to the show. And they're all kind of aware of the general situation. You know, they know that there's been manipulation to set up this dialectic, and they certainly know that their culture has been destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
But the same way we know. I mean, sex, drugs, and rock and roll took our – think about how far the Europeans have fallen from the 1950s till today. The African Americans were on their way. They, you know, they weren't at parity. They certainly weren't in the middle class, but they were the Great Society program and, you know, the stuff that, you know, had the CIA was doing against them just took them into a debased condition. And so now we have a situation where you have all this violence. What to do about it? All I can suggest to him is just trying to clarify the reality to the African Americans as to how they've got here, because I don't think there's enough clarity, and separate ourselves. Because right now, if you look at, like, I was looking at this video of, it was in Baltimore, I think. And this is an area where the businesses have stopped paying taxes.
Mm-hmm.
Have you read about this? There's a whole group of businesses that have just stopped paying taxes because they say, look, the city is not doing anything to keep our businesses open. The violence is just out of control. And mm-hmm. there was a video of, like, a white woman being body slammed onto the concrete by a black guy, right? It's right in the middle of a public square. Well, you know, we shouldn't be together, frankly. I'm sorry. This is part of the purification. The integration that has occurred was all done for destructive purposes for both ethnicities. I mean, that's to me is obvious. And to the, you know, like if you look at the autonomous zones, which were, you know, very integrated, these are places where anybody can survive. I mean, this is just.
Well, you can't organize anything because there's no.
You had that black.
Can't communicate. Yeah.
I mean, it's ridiculous. So these aren't, this is no emerging culture. This is just these are just puppets that are being taken to oblivion. So, I mean, everything.
Well, I mean, if you look at it from some integration, I mean, if let's say you're blacks in the 50s, are you more likely to develop a stronger economically, culturally, intellectually, if you stay cohesive in a group and concentrate your wealth and to build your community as opposed to being dispersed into the wider white population? Obviously, it's going to dilute your power.
Sure. Integration was always a weapon.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm not talking against integration as a more. I mean, in the abstract, obviously, you know, you can talk about how good it is. I mean, you know, it's like apple pie. But as it was brought to America, it was a weapon.
Well, if you're talking about mutual respect, yeah. But that's not how people organize or in their community. It's like saying, you know, it's almost like having a family and saying, well, because you believe in the confines of a family, that you don't, that you're, you know, that you're, what's the term, racist, or you're a geneticist. What term would you use for that? Because you have preference for your family or your extended family. It was a trick. It's a you know idea of equality, liberty, fraternity. It's a slogan at Canada, the French Revolution. You know, it's a nice slogan. The only problem is all those ideas are contradictory, because you can't have equality with liberty because people are different, and you can't have fraternity with total equality, because fraternity means fraternal organizations, and that means communities, and you're already dividing. So it's just one of these slogans that it conjures up sort of a utopian idea of everyone getting along and being nice. And of course, given the even assuming that there weren't malevolent actors at the top, you know, manipulating things, the way the human condition is not going to work out that way.
Right.
You know, so it's a bad idea. And, you know, however great it sounds as a theory, if it can't be applied to reality, then it's a bad idea. And obviously it hasn't worked out well for all the parties involved.
this is a bizarre idea, but I think it's actually probably the clearest first step. It's basically what we should do is set up African American and European reservations, you know, next to the Indian reservations, and then have treaty agreements.
Well, listen, you wouldn't even have to do that because outside coercion, outside social engineering and, you know, HUD programs and Section 8 housing and social engineers, scheming up ways to mix people together, people would follow along those lines anyway.
Of course. But, you know, the thing is, here's the thing, the purification. You're going to have a lot of black kind of middle class and intellectual guys and girls needing to get out of the city, right?
Yeah.
Because it's just going to, let's face it. I mean, the autonomous zone is coming to a city near you. That's all. And the autonomous zone, we've already seen what they're like. You can see where the country is going to take the cities. It's just going to be absolute. They're going to be death factors. They're just going to be there to like reduce population. I mean, literally, it's going to be like the fantasies that were presented about the concentration camps after, you know, during World War II. It's just going to be death camps. So people of clear minds are going to have to get out. I think that immigration is obviously going to be very difficult because of the history that the Judaic Masonic political, you know, kind of influence has had upon us. We should think about treaty negotiations, and because we will need one another for trade, for commerce, for all sorts of reasons, and to help defend each other. The ideal is not freedom, because that's, you know, but it's really just moral order. You know what I mean? I mean, if you, and by moral order, I mean where, you know, there can be some respect for one another, desire to have families, you know, these kinds of things. I mean, the moral order as an operating kind of principle for the people who leave. Because inside the cities, I mean, as I look at the future, Tim, I mean, I think the autonomous zone is like the top 1%, you know, because remember, you're going to be adding to that complete chaos, no police for years. You're going to be adding corporate fascism. They'll be driving around in their bulldozers, shooting people. And then remember, fentanyl—it's, you know, like Huxley had in mind, fentanyl to everyone. No one can survive in that.
By the way, yeah, isn't like Wuhan the primary source of fentanyl?
Yeah.
But we're worried about a virus out of fentanyl.
Yeah. Ironic, isn't it? Yeah, so we just have to get out. I mean, it's like the brutal conversation I had this afternoon. God, that was painful, man, because, you know, I just wanted to, you know, like, this guy is fighting battles that it's just unimaginable that American would need to do. I mean, for one thing, he's trying to keep, like, his family members from taking the vaccine. I mean, he knows perfectly well it's poison, but there is so much social pressure. They can't go to parties. They have these parties where you have to be vaccinated or they're not invited, you know. So his daughter is under social pressure. And I said, well, just see if you can get the unvaxxed to organize their own social.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I mean, this is what you have to do.
Well, make our own country club then.
exactly right. And just push the purification along faster. You know, and in doing so, the organization that you'll need will start to be set up. It's just like I was, you know, like in my fantasy about the doctors. I mean, the doctors, you know, I mean, the logic of, I mean, it's not their fault because they're just confronting such a brand new situation, but their logic is so horrendous. The idea of giving a criticism to a government that would make a declaration of fascism and dictatorship is irrational. Why do they think that the government is going to care about what the doctors say about, we want to like to give good medicine? Do you think if they cared about that, they would have made the, so since this is the world you live in, and see, this is my point about their logic, is that it just fails to understand their world. So this is what the people inside the—
it's a demonstration of a belief in the civic nationalism, or the civic institutions they still think function and have long since been subverted or gone away.
Yeah. they grew up with these ideas. There is a kind of, you know, neurologic momentum, you know, that they still kind of.
It's like appealing to the ideas of the Roman Republic in the 5th century or something.
Yeah, that's right. When the Bithagos were like in the street. So, so it just isn't, it's just not rational. And they're it's the same logic that, you know, I would say to the protesters, when you realize COVID is fake and you realize the vaccine is a genocide tool, there's really no reason to go to your politician and ask him to be nice.
Yeah, or expect him to do the right. Yeah, just got to either bypass them or transcend them. Yeah,
you have to start organizing among yourself to defend yourself.
But back to this whole idea of the blood libel, we've seen where this goes. I mean, obviously, like I said, long time coming. I mean, this is the logic of the Civil Rights Revolution, which really was anti-white because the protections are. Laws or passed weren't designed to protect whites, particularly white males, as women were considered an oppressed minority, even though the majority is that the whole bureaucracy, sort of a legal cottage industry was created where it sort of bypassed or usurped the Constitution. So the whole old ideas equality before the law and legal neutrality, these things, neutral principles are lost because now it's all goals oriented. I mean, it's affirmative action. You have to achieve these goals and to hell with constitutional principles or rule of law and these things. And this was something you could tolerate given the demographics. And also that's how most white Americans swallowed it or accepted it, because it was the idea of you're extending something. And it was for a little while, this would have to be necessary to we even the playing field or got it closer to that goal. But as years passed by, this wasn't happening. In fact, things were disintegrating because on the cultural front, moral anarchy was being celebrated and given legal protection. So you introduce moral anarchy into the social order, you're not surprised that the political order disintegrates into anarchy. We have all this talk, of course, then since last year, you had, of course, the George Floyd, the sort of this anti-whitey, hates malice struggle session, nationwide struggle session that we all witnessed. This year, we've talked about what's going on in Portland, the public schools, is sort of this weird, struggle sessions that white students, grade school are being subjected to. Realize that these institutions have long since been subverted, taken over, and the enemy's in charge of these things. So you have to withdraw your support for these institutions at that point. But what we have now is, along with this sort of these narratives that just paint white people as being all evil, it's all, basically the elite have created a view of history where American history is all centered around black people. It's a 1619 project. So it's black, black, black all the time. And so the 1619 project, so America history can only be understood in the context of black oppression. Where in the past we were taught, well, this was a part of America. The black experience was part of American history. It wasn't now they've created a situation where it's all about that, which is, very tendentious and, of course, completely inaccurate. And it's much more to American history than just black people. But the 1619 Project, which is supported by the New York Times, was instituted in a lot of curriculum. Now there's a lot of pushback, which is a good sign, in various school districts and counties where parents are finally pushing back, and some states are actually banning it, like Florida and these things. So now you have some politicians, some state-level politicians, who are now using it grandstanding on the issue. Good, we'll use them for that issue. But at the same time, you have this open talk. And not only do you have a big upsurge in anti-white violence, which isn't being talked about, which is always because black and white crime has always been disproportionate. The participation of blacks in crime has always been disproportionate to the representation of the population. You do the 13 to 50, but really it's more like 4 or 5 to 50 because it's black males usually with the violent crime. But you also have this open talk rhetoric, anti-white rhetoric, and of course we mentioned, I think we referred to it, is this recent talk by this psychiatrist Aruna Kulanani, who is of Indian descent, talking about how she fantasizes about killing white people, shooting them in the head because white people are psychopathic. Well, lady, by the way, she's a board certified psychiatrist, and she was giving a talk up at Yale University where she received applause for it. So you have that. Then you also have recently this guy. I have it here. Yeah, a research article in Medical Journal describes whiteness as a malignant parasitic-like condition. A research article published last month in the Journal of American Psychoanalytic Association called Whiteness, a malignant parasitic-like condition. That description, along with other language in the article, has caused public anger, and the backlash against the author was evident on social media, one should hope. The article titled On Having Whiteness was written by Dr. Donald Moss, a white man who is a faculty member of both the New York Psychoanalytic Institute and the San Francisco Center for Psychoanalysis. Well, again, consider psychoanalysis. Where did that come from? Moss wrote that...
Is he Jewish?
No, I don't think he is. In the article, Moss wrote that white people have a particular susceptibility to a parasitic condition, which he claims renders its host appetites voracious, insatiable, and perverse. I don't know what science has to back this up. He explained he believed whiteness establishes entitled dominion that enables the host to have power without limit, force without restriction, and violence without mercy, and it increases one's drive to terrorize. Moss has previously lectured on the subject of whiteness before On Having Whiteness. It was published in a bi-monthly peer-reviewed Journal of American Psychoanalytic Association. On May 27th in 2019, he delivered his theory describing whiteness as a parasitic condition as a plenary address for the South African Psychoanalytical Association. That's funny. And he has also lectured on it at New York Psychoanalytical Society and Institute and the Center for Modern Psychoanalytical Studies in New York. Now, the fact he feels free to share these ideas, this is published in peer reviewed, so you think isn't this vetted before it's published? But they feel free to talk this way. It means the fact that Yale University or this, you know, the Psychoanalytical Association means that those in power, the elite, want these ideas spread. You know, so it's got the backing of the elite, who aren't black people, by the way.
they're obviously going to try to create violence against the white middle class. They want a response. I mean, what they're hoping to get is some photo ops of white guys with ARs killing black children or something, and then they can, you know, have the moral authority to disarm America. You know, they have these kinds of structures that we are within.
So this is like agitprop that's sent out there for a reaction.
Yeah, it's agitprop. That's a good right. And so it's in other words, they're trying to create the condition that they claim to is wrong, and they're trying to prevent. So this is absurd. I think everyone can see it. I think this kind of stuff, you know. I honestly don't think that the propaganda, that the stuff that could make these ideas find, you know, some receptive mind, you know, for these stuff. I think that propaganda has come to an end, Tim. I mean, it's just the independent media has put out a lot of ideas, and the people who were clear-minded were open to them. And those people, whites and blacks and everybody else, I don't think they would, you know, go, oh my God, you're right, we've got to go out and beat up some white people. I just think that the people who would buy into this are on their way off the planet already. They're vaxxed. They have no sperm. They are, you know, into pornography. And quite a few of them are into fentanyl. They've already been killed, basically. I think that what's really coming out of the purification is a kind of resistance to these and an awareness that that these is just obvious propaganda. I really think, you know, could be wrong, but I just think that they tried to hit us from every angle, right? I mean, you know, COVID, the vaccine, the destruction of the business, the white supremacy, and all these different, you know, Trump lose, you know, having the election. So all of these things. I was talking to some teenagers yesterday, and they just seem pretty aware and just could care less. You know, they know that this is just, they know the government is engaged in agitprop. Mm-hmm. And they're whites and they just know, and they're not like, you know, Hitler Youth Brigade or something. They're just kids on the beach.
Yeah,
I just don't think their self image, their self esteem is going to be damaged by this stuff. I don't think. I mean, they're of course, but there's going to be like pseudo events, you know, where they can create dialectics, you know, and they can use them as justification for political action. I mean, I think this stuff all worked in the old world, Tim, but the new world we're going into pretty quick, the Europeans, and I think the blacks too, are the ones who survive are going to be much more clear-minded.
Yeah.
It's going to be harder to have this kind of crap have any sort of effect on us.
Well, it seems to me that they've accelerated because they're pulling this stuff off when, you know, when whites are still two-thirds, probably more of the citizens of the country.
Yeah,
and probably closer to 70% if you count like legal citizens, and they're so. But then again, if you look at the birth rates, you know, and the baby boomers are getting old, that can drop suddenly. Especially at the same time, they're trying to pour more immigrants into the country because to dilute, you know, the demographics, to change the demographics, to change the politics, and. You know what will happen. You know, I'm of the opinion that the civic ideas that make America, because America, you know, isn't an ethno state; it's a proposition state. But these propositions tend to be supported along ethnic lines. It's, you know, the Constitution, freedom of speech, Second Amendment. These things, kind of it's a white thing. Sorry. Yeah. And so in order to embrace these ideas, you have to embrace, you know, the white ideas. These are European concepts and ideas that people can embrace. But the reality is, the polling indicates, as the demographics change, as the white majority dwindles, support for these ideas dwindle. So in essence, even the proposition state, the civic national state, ultimately has ethnic backing. And that's why the Southern Poverty Law Center, is gleefully charting the white decline, and why certain Jewish organizations have been so dedicated to flooding the country with non-European, non-white immigrants, because they know breaking heritage America is important to creating a, sort of a Tower of Babel situation, which they always see themselves as being benefiting from, because they're very cohesive. And that's one of the ironies, is that we're told that there is no such thing as white identity, but then it does exist for the purposes of being derided or being criticized or for being taxed. You know, at the same time, other groups are told to celebrate their identity. You know, so, and yet it is true. I mean, I understand the criticism, because white nationalism is sort of ahistorical. There's no white nationality, there's European nationality, but there is an American, there was an American ethno idea created, forced, through the country's experience. So there was an idea of American culture.
They to work so hard to destroy it.
Destroy it, exactly. And one thing people don't realize, and, you know, people don't like, we like to say I'm colorblind, I don't see these things, but no one really actually believes that. That's a lie they tell themselves. But the problem is that your enemies are painting you white. So you're treating you as such. So it's like the old saying is, you may not be interested in the Trotsky said, you may not be interested in the party, but the party's interested in you. They're not going to leave you alone. So you have to find some way to respond to this.
Yeah, you know, I look for opportunities for organization, and I think that one group that is ripe to organize with the good old fashioned European purified survivors of upcoming apocalypse are the black anti-vax church groups,
mm-hmm.
Who I've had a chance to have a little bit of communication with some of these guys. And I think you could have really good treaties with these guys. I mean, they believe me. Imagine being a black family trying to transition from like lower middle class to upper middle class right now in America. I mean, it's just a bewildering cesspool of weirdness to try to move.
Yes.
Through, you know? And remember that the blacks as a percentage are even more anti-vax than the whites are. And for the right reason, you know, they don't trust the government. So the black culture has received just catastrophic blows. I mean, the Great Society program, the crack cocaine, you know, so they've been shattered, but whoever comes through that purification, and I don't know any idea what fraction this is going to be. I mean, because the black kids that, like, I was in LA a couple weeks ago, the black kids that I was saw and kind of hung out with just scared the hell out of me. I mean, I could just sense these guys, they were close to violence, and they didn't have any restrictions against them. They're young street kids, you know, in Venice. And I mean, scared the hell out of me. But at the same time, I know that the fentanyl brigade in Seattle is mainly white, and they also scare me. So the fact that these guys, you know, are frightening is my signal to move out. When we do move out, you know, like the guys I was talking to, Seattle, I mean, literally, Tim, they are literally packing up as we speak to flee a city that they've been in for generations and had established businesses.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that is literally what it's come to. This is not, you know, some kind of theory. This is like what they are doing to survive.
Well,
so
I mean,
get
if
out
you,
there.
Yeah, I mean, you can't look at Seattle, look what happened to Seattle just in the past few years, and say this is accidental or coincidental.
No, I mean, it was Soros,
yeah,
and Bezos and Gates, you know, destroying a city that had been one of the greatest white middle class business zones in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And they have succeeded. They've took away the business. So the talent in the middle class that was there is still there. They just need to get out, get away from the fentanyl brigade, get to areas where the sheriff is on your side, have some frank discussions. We got to stop being kind of you know, nervous about talking about these things. The guys I was talking to today, Tim, are absolutely clear-minded. They know who the enemy is. They know what has happened to them. They want to get out. And I was saying, when you get out there, organize, politically organize. And one group that I think is a potential ally are the black, particularly those that had church traditions, because they seem to actually have some, you know, they have resisted the fentanyl. I don't think, and as long as, see, the key to me is family. If you have like families, then that's a culture you can at least have treaties with and interaction with.
Well, there's order and there's lives, there's logos.
Yeah,
so,
the black
yeah.
kids that I was talking to in Venice, I mean, their lives are so shattered.
Mm-hmm.
They are really dangerous to me and to themselves, you know. And when you see these wilding videos,
yes,
gosh, you can really see how the damage to this culture, you know, has been
oh, yeah.
done. How much, and they need, and you see, just like the Europeans need to wake up and have some honest talks about who did this to us.
Mm-hmm.
Why are we having to get out of Seattle? What was really in back of all this? Have some honest discussions. Black community needs to do the same thing. They need even worse than the whites do. Because they need to say, how in the hell did we get from 1955 and Smokey Robinson and the Miracles to the fentanyl brigade that's sitting outside our houses now trying to, you know, like rob us?
Yeah, there was. I was listening to Glenn Lowry, the black economist, was talking about that, talking about all this nonsense about police violence. I mean, it's the black youth, it's the killing each other, it's the anarchy and disorder in black families. He just said that you can't even call them families. You know, most people would be amazed at how much dysfunction there is in chaos there is in the lives of these people. So it's not surprising that it's demonstrated or showed itself in this violence. That's so easy just to disregard and ridicule. And I understand. I mean, from this, you know, if you have a family, your job isn't to sort of parse out or figure out what their problems are. Your problems, I can't deal with. I got to go. You know, I understand that, and you want that separation. I just remember this was 15, 16 years ago. I was at a hotel in the southern part of the state, and they had an indoor pool. And it was at night, but at the time, my eldest daughter was like 2 years old or something, but she wanted to go swimming. So we go down to the pool, my wife, and at that time we only had one kid, and we're in the pool. And of course, the pool's empty, and we had the whole pool to ourselves. But all of a sudden, I see out of the corner of my eye the group of about maybe 15 black teenagers, male, female, come in. And they come into the pool. Of course, I have to say, uh-oh, what's going to happen? Not only are they thinking to myself, not only are they teenage, young, but they're black. And, you know, I hope they behave themselves. It turns out they were the most polite, respectful group of teenagers I had ever had happened to deal with. They realized there was a kid in the pool, and they were, you know, they actually liked playing with the kid, and they were real nice. They immediately calmed down when they saw that there were people in the pool. Of course, then I looked out in the parking lot, and it was a church congregation.
Isn't it amazing?
So, you know, so I was like, it does make a difference. You know?
Isn't it amazing how righteous humans can be?
Yeah.
If they come out of real families,
yes,
and have real faith system. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is the thing. When you look at the autonomous zone, brother, this is a artificial construction. Every American, everyone, I don't care if you're even like, you know, in the fentanyl brigade, every single one of us needs to look at that honestly and go, how and why did this happen?
Mm-hmm.
You know, this isn't history unfolding. This was a plan. We were attacked, and we have to start having, and you know, it's like, you know, you get this like white and black, you know, with like the crazy lady at Yale.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she's talking these insane and vicious and murderous statements against whites.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Tim, how about some honest discussion about behavior of Jews?
Yes.
Is that possible?
Yes.
Or is that just something? See, like she can sit there and talk about her fantasies about killing white people. She's just a crazy lady who's been brought in to, you know, Yale to pot. But you can't even have a real discussion about George Soros. Could there be something ethnic in back of his behavior?
Yeah, let's talk about the authoritarian personality.
Are the authoritarian personality,
yeah,
are
yeah.
the Southern Poverty Law Center, are the Schiff family, you know, funding Martin Luther King, all of these elements that bring that help us get to the autonomous zone. Can we talk about them a little bit, huh? Is it possible?
Yeah. Why are all these Jewish rich Jewish families funding the, you know, the Commission on the Tulsa Race Massacre? What's their interest?
Well, and also promoting transgenderism. And promoting transgenderism. I mean, this
yes.
is just guys. This is we are being attacked, and we have to know it and be honest in our kind of description of our reality.
Mm-hmm.
Because what that leads us to is how we can organize ourselves. I, you know, it's like when you know, because I saw that the statement from you know, the Ontario fascist group to the doctors, and I'll tell you, Tim, I was thinking, you know, this is going to be a bloodbath. You know, I, you can see how clever they are and how they're in control and calm. I'm seeing a little bit of panic. It's like the vax thing is not going like they thought it would. And the independent media continues to bring out the truth. I mean, obviously there's shills and there's misinformation and people don't know how to think and it's just a mess. But at the same time, we have the truth on our side, right? And we also have the energy of a group who's being genocided and attacked. That's a powerful combination. We're thinking better every day. There's more information every day, certainly. I mean, I know I'm crazy, but I just honestly think that we have a chance to survive. But I think there's just going to be brutal. I mean, people have no idea the body count we're going to be looking at over the next 10 years. I mean, the Georgia Guidestone numbers are actually possible, you know, because of the food situation, how that's going to go out. So. And of course, you know, the vax is going to eventually, I think, start picking these guys off. So, hey, game on. And, you know, it's like I always, whenever I'm in communication with people that are depressed, I always go, look, you're depressed because you've been attacked and you don't know how to fight back. That's why you're depressed. It's anger going against yourself. When you start to fight, when you start to go, the hell with these bastards, I'm going to fight back. You're not depressed anymore at all because we're designed to fight. This, when you start getting organized, when you start going, I'm going to go out there and organize some people. I don't care if they think I'm crazy. I know I'm right, and I've got the guts to do it because I'm full of energy, because I'm angry. Go out and do it. This thing, you've got to, once you start fighting, you will start living with the reality of your situation instead of denying it, and you'll have your good emotions, good old human emotions. Right off the bat, I mean, you know, like I'd love to see righteous Americans retake Christianity, you know, which is obviously being led by evil people right now. That's a goal we could have, you know.
Yeah, turn in your mitre and your And your croziers, bishops.
Well, those guys have just, I
Yeah.
mean, you know, who would not, like the brilliant biologist, David Schmidt. God, is that guy brilliant? I'm out of the kind of church there. And he pointed out how money, you know, the COVID money is
Yes.
actually just far down into the Catholic congregations. And that's why they didn't say boo, you
Yeah.
know,
Yeah, so
bought a whole lot of them. So,
it made up for the drop in donations into collection plates. It's got money from the New York Fed. So it's like
well,
manna from
it's
like money fell like manna from heaven, right?
literally, it was like a miracle.
It's
You
a
know, it's
miracle.
like, but you know, so yeah, they have given us a pretty good blow, and man, they have slaughtered us over the years. You know, talk about blood libel, World War I, you know, pushing us into each other, the Nazi party that they created so they could justify slaughtering Europe. So they've been hacking away, but we're still standing, and we're getting more and more clear-minded, more and more people. So this is, you know, time to turn off propaganda and get on with the fight.
Sounds good. Okay, Joe.
Sounds good, brother. Well, have a great week. I'm telling you, this is things are getting starting to heat up. It's going to get interesting here real quick.
That it looks to be the case. Okay.
All right, buddy.
Bye-bye.
Talk to you soon.